Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book, manga, and graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today for this final episode of 2018 is our comic sage, Andrew.
Hello.
And the old man himself, it's Deadpool / comics grandpa.
Hello.
Hey, Mick.
I also go by the name of Mick.
Yeah, I know.
It should be pointed out.
Yes.
I noticed the comic sage gets the full comic sage alter ego 4Panel nickname and yes. Then his name.
Yes, he does.
I get just the stuff about being old.
I mean, you're lucky you finally stepped up to actually getting introduced.
To be fair, the only person who ever misses me out is me.
Anyway, today we're going to be talking about Christmas comics, that weird thing that they seem to do.
Hold on, did someone just put your nuts in a vice halfway through that sentence?
Christmas comics, I don't understand them. I don't get them. I don't understand what they're about. I mean, well, I kind of do. Christmas comics, yes, but you got Christmas comics, and then you have this bizarre thing that I've discovered called holiday comics, which are associated with Christmas, but could also apply to Easter and Eid and Hanukkah and various other holidays as well, but seem only to apply to Christmas.
But this is the thing, isn't it?
Also counterpoint, sometimes they do actually apply to Hanukkah as well.
Yeah, but you're never going to see Superman celebrating Eid, are you?
Probably not.
But Miss Marvel might.
Miss Marvel might, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there is a Marvel holiday special, which was one of the ones I was flipping through, where they do have, like, all the Jewish Marvel characters celebrating Hanukkah, so...
Yeah?
Right, I get it. So you only sent me the messed up Christmas comics, is that what you're saying?
Yes. What did you expect, Mick?
I'll have you know, I've got some messed up Christmas comics that I read, but they were messed up in a good way.
Listen, Mick, the only reason you didn't get a comic featuring the Vesta, the Ultimate Warrior, beating up Santa Claus and stealing his clothes is because I can't find a copy of it anywhere.
I mean, just the title of the second one you sent through.
Yeah, but I'll have you know, that one is a classic.
Okay, what was the title?
Oh, you'll find out, Rob.
You will find out.
All right. Let's get on with this then.
Yeah, so I take it we have been reading some Christmas comics.
Yes, we have.
And who wants to bring this pot full of festive cheer?
Well, I'll start off with the relatively normal one you sent me.
Oh, you know it's good when this one is the relatively normal one.
Which is that team up that we've all been waiting for, Thing and Ghost Rider.
It's already good.
That's the weirdest Marvel 2-in-1.
No. It's already gold. The Thing and Ghost Rider in a Christmas special is just, it's already there.
Let's let a Jewish character and literally a demon from hell celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
This is as Andrew sort of alluded to, it is from the Marvel 2-in-1 series from the 70s. And it's called Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah.
Again, did the Thing fart again?
I said Silent Night, Deadly Night, not Silent, but Deadly Night. But it even brands itself easily the most offbeat holiday extravaganza of them all. Except they didn't know. Which comic he was going to send me later.
Yeah, no, I took that as a challenge.
And one that you rose to remarkably well, it has to be said. So, it's from 1974. It's issue 8 of the 2-in-1 series. And there's obviously some precursor. Basically, Thing's trying to get Reed to tear himself away from his work, the research that he's doing. And he's trying to do that on Christmas Eve because for the sake of Sue and the kid, you know, it'd be nice for Reed to be there doing Christmassy things. Ghost Rider, and I'm not familiar with what had been previously happening to Johnny Blaze in this run because it was 45 years ago. I'm not that good at remembering things. Also, I'm not sure I knew that Ghost Rider existed back then. But he's riding along the road, when suddenly he sees three guys riding across the desert In Arizona. On camels. In Arizona. Following a big, bright star. In Arizona.
That sounds familiar.
And it turns out that this is the same big, bright star that Reed is focused on building a telescope and scanner to read the signals from, because it's not right, apparently, having this big, bright star over Arizona in the middle of the desert. And eventually, Ben talks Reed round to finishing what he's doing, getting a fix on the star. Ben will take the jet, investigate the problem. If he needs backup, he'll call. But the Richards get to spend a family Christmas together.
What a good guy the thing is.
Absolutely. Anyway, long story short, on his way, Ben bumps into Johnny, who's already met these three wise men, and asks them what's going on. They've offered him a camel. He said, no, it's all right, I've got my own ride. Why men on camels would offer him a ride, I don't know. There's some reference but as Johnny goes along and follows the star, he finds the town of Bethlehem
in Arizona,
populated by some Bethlehemians.
Except they all look like Native Americans.
I'm not sure about the geographical accuracy of this story.
And so both Ben and Johnny are walking around town and they're thinking, actually, there's something fishy going on here. And it turns out, I still can't quite believe that either me, the writers, or the entire world weren't on drugs at this point. But it turns out that this is all the plot of Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle!
Who had last been seen being taken away by this North American tribe who were actually powerful aliens to be taught the wicked error of his ways in the way that he used his powers, only to find that actually he'd been using his powers right all along, just not well enough. So what he'd decided was that in order to achieve the godhood he so richly deserved, he'd create a town of Bethlehem and enslave the people who were supposed to be teaching him right from wrong into believing that they were the people of Bethlehem so that he could be reborn into the baby Jesus. And then people would worship him as a god.
That's my favourite anime.
And it's one of those comics where you go, and you're kind of thinking that these days, when we live in a slightly more secular society, you could probably get away with those kind of flights of fantasies, the reimagining of the nativity in a way that would be happy. But you're thinking, this is 1974. Bing Crosby was still doing Christmas specials in a woolly jumper. People held Christmas dear. How did they get this past the Comic Code Authority?
I think what happened was the Comic Code Authority, they sat down and they read it and they were about to put a big no-no X through it when they just thought of the baby Jesus but with Miracle Man's ridiculous moustache.
And this is it. The thing is, they might as well have just called this Marvel 2-in-1 presents The Thing and Ghost Rider in Blasphemous Story. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of crazy fun. I recommend drinking heavily before you enjoy this one, if you can find it somewhere. But oh, man, it messed with my head a lot.
So much that you almost changed nationality.
Yeah, almost. Quite. So, yeah, that was...
I do have a slight correction to make in your analysis, Mick.
Yeah.
When you said that you can't believe the writers weren't on drugs...
I think you're fine.
Yeah, no, they almost definitely were.
In my defence, I'd spotted that someone was on drugs. I just wasn't sure who. I mean, I thought I was not taking drugs when I read it, but it was so bizarre, I couldn't be sure that someone hadn't slipped me something without my knowledge. Mind you, I had just watched an Ingmar Bergman film for Eclectica, so my brain was slightly sensitive anyway.
See, what if what I actually sent you was just a completely blank PDF?
Oh, man. And I just made all that up myself?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
you flicked to the credits on this comic and it's just... Words and art. Mick.
It's all in crayon, is it? It was all in the mind.
So, yeah, So that's the least weird of my Christmas issues.
Well, I wouldn't say it's the least weird of your Christmas issues, Mick. I'm sure you've got more.
No. It's the least weird of the Christmas issues that I'm prepared to talk with you two on a podcast.
All right. Yeah. No worries.
It has also given me a whole host of other Christmas issues, though.
Indeed. Yes. Some of which I'll be billing the therapy to you guys.
Do you want to go next, Andrew, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'll go next. Because I've also dipped my toes into Marvel's Christmassy fair. And what I've been reading is What The? Issue 10 from, I believe, 1991. Now, I'm not going to go through the full issue because to explain What The? Was like a Marvel comedy series, which, you know, kind of riffed off the idea of the What If stories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Only what if all the jokes were sometimes vaguely approaching funny, but most of the time were either very bad or like relied on cultural awareness of like literally the year I was born. So we'll skip most of those. That was probably the second best story in this anthology. It involves the new superhero duo Cookies and Milk. One of whom is like a big, gritty thing-type dude made of cookies, and the other is a lady who can turn into milk.
How is that useful?
I'm slightly disturbed by that.
I mean, it's useful when you're...
If you need to hide in a glass.
Well, no, it's great for when your enemy is the sinister Colonel Gate, which, you know, works a lot better in comic form because it's abbreviated to COL.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
He's a giant tube of toothpaste. But see, in just saying that, you get the joke.
Yes.
Rather than needing, like, 10 or so pages of, this is the joke, do you get the joke? Here's the joke again. They're cookies and milk.
Yeah, but milk makes your teeth stronger, so why would milk be an enemy of Colonel Gate?
You've literally ruined that story.
Because comics, Rob.
Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin that story. Just
because comics. It's always, I mean, the answer to any question, how, is always because comics.
I mean, come on, Rob. Did that pitch sound like it could handle the tiniest bit of logic applied to it?
No.
Anyway, what this issue does have, though, is the story I'll Be Doomed for Christmas, a Yuletide fable by Scott Lobdell, John Byrne, Daniel Vozzo, and Jade Mode.
Is this where I think it is?
It was the night before Christmas, and all through his land, Doom's subject slept soundly in the palm of his hand.
It is what I think it is.
A long stocking was hung by the chimney with flair, as always alone, though he didn't care. When suddenly, clang, clang, clang through the air, my intruder alarm, 'tis madness, who would dare? Up to the rooftop, through the castle he sped, visions of battle dance through his head. Gasp! Saint Nick, what are you doing here? It's my job, Dr. Doom, one evening a year. Instead of being naughty, would you mind being nice? You can start by prying my head from this vice. Yeah,
Sandy was about that.
Dr. Doom, and he got to caught in one of Dr. Doom's death traps. So there's only one thing that can be done.
Well, someone's got to deliver all those presents, right?
Yes, and soon Doom appeared once again on his roof, starting the reindeer from antler to hoof. Prepare yourselves, creatures. Away we will zoom. I'm the new monarch of Christmas. I am Santa Doom. And it's Dr. Doom, dressed in, like, Santa's tunic thing, but also still in his armour and flowing green cloak, and also with, like, a fake beard over his mask.
The fake beard was the best.
And that's the bit that gets me, because I can understand him borrowing Santa's outfit, but he had to make the beard.
Oh, can you imagine the Doombot that got that job? Because the Doombots have a degree of sentience these days, so that Doombot's like, why do I have to make the beard?
Do not question me, Doombot. Doom is the most committed to cosplay.
You either make the beard or you muck out the reindeer when we get back. It's your choice.
So yeah, Dr. Doom speeds off delivering presents all around the world. Eventually he goes to drop some off at the Avengers, only to find Can my eyes believe this wondrous sight? Do they really buy gifts for the foes they fight? Well, now I'm angry. This makes me sore. I've never gotten a gift from the Fantastic Four.
Oh, dear.
And yes, there is a package with two Ultron written on it. Dream kind of takes off, you know, traveling back around. Only now he's got a pair of mysterious figures following him, soon revealed to be Captain America and Quasar.
Oh, God, no.
That always tickles me whenever there's something from the 90s. It's just...
It's that Warren Worthington III, isn't it? Or whatever his name was.
But, oh, no. Warren Worthington III is Angel. Quasar is the far less ridiculous Wendell Ellis Vaughn.
That's it. Wendell Ellis Vaughn. Sorry, not Warren Worthington. Yeah, Wendell Ellis Vaughn.
Remember that, everyone? A man named Wendell used to be like the hottest property of the 90s.
Oh, yeah. He used to be Defender of the Universe in place of Captain Marvel, who...
What, was she on maternity leave or something?
Not that Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel and maternity leave.
Yeah.
There's a sad story, not for Christmas special.
Yeah, but it wasn't Carol Danvers, because when he was Quasar, she was still... she was going by the name Warbird, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was around the same time.
Okay.
So, anyway, Captain America and Quasar, they're kind of following after Doctor Doom all stealthy-like. When suddenly Speedball just bursts in from nowhere screaming, "Hey, Cap, hey, Quasar, ain't Christmas grand? What can I do to lend you a hand?" And you just see Cap just like shove his glove over Speedball's mouth and like drag him off to the side. Yeah, So Doctor Doom, he's still doing his thing. Ends up having to give his presents to the Fantastic Four, which goes about as well as you expect. And so, of course, there is then a massive fight all throughout New York between Doom, the Fantastic Four, Cap, Quasar, and Speedball, until, of course, they land in front of a hospital for sickly children.
Does it actually say hospital for sickly children?
Yes, that is the sign in front of the door. And so Doom, filled with the spirit of Christmas, says, "It's okay, the heroes are my helpers." And I did not think I would ever read a comic in which a small girl hugs Dr. Doom saying, "I love you, Santa."
To be fair, I've got a fair suspicion that Dr. Doom never thought he'd appear in a comic. Well, ever. Because I guess if he was thinking about it, he probably wouldn't be in a comic.
But no, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because it turns out what once Doom gets back and gives Santa his stuff back, this was also a part of Doom's master plan to get his heart's desire. It's a soft, cuddly teddy bear. That's the end of it. It's Dr. Doom hugging a teddy bear with a big old smile on his metal face.
His metal face can smile?
Apparently so.
When he's got his big
cuddly teddy bear. Or even better, no, his metal face does not smile. It is permanently scaled. So clearly Dr. Doom has had to have a separate faceplate made.
He's put a lot of effort into this Christmas special, hasn't he?
He has indeed.
Is he like Wurzel Gummidge? Has he got interchangeable metal heads?
No, he's got spare masks, one for each emotion. He just carries them in a pouch under his cape where you can never see them.
Or he's got some kind of technology that he does that trick that parents do in front of their kids with the hand.
Oh,
they have smiley face, sad face, smiley face, sad face.
No, they've actually got an act like that in China where it's like a dance. I've been watching Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, and they were in China, and there was basically somebody doing a dance, and they waved this fan in front of the face, and they changed the mask really quickly, or changed the color and the expression on the mask. Maybe Dr. Doom's a practitioner of that.
Definitely. Dr. Doom is master of all mask-based amusement.
Now, where's that fan? Oh, right. Okay, my turn. Okay, I'm going to give you guys a choice because I've read a fair few. So I'm not going to tell you what they are. Rather, I'm going to give you the option to choose which publisher. So you've got a choice of IDW, DC, Space Goat Productions, Dark Horse, or Marvel?
Well, we have already done quite a few Marvel ones, and Space Goat are usually fairly wild, so let's go with them.
Yeah, and I've got a DC one coming up, so...
Okay, so...
Oh, boy, howdy does me.
That's the sensible part of mine.
Okay, it's Evil Dead 2, A Merry Deadite Christmas, in which Ash and his compatriot Annie, it's Christmas time, and Ash gets a telepathic message from a guy at an amusement park who happened to find a book which now has cast its dastardly spell, and now he's trapped and he needs Ash to come and save him. Now, this came out in 2016, so it's pretty recent. I think it ties in a little bit with, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is also the same series, which had that one issue where Ash went to hell and fought Hitler.
Yes, this is also that series. So anyway, Ash and Annie go to the amusement park where they find the elves have become deadites, the decorations have become deadites, the candy has become deadites, and there are two survivors, both of whom are children, one of whom is wielding an axe and knows how to hack a Wi-Fi password, or his parents' parental lock, I should say.
But with the axe?
No. It's basically Ash wants him to prove that he's actually a real human being and says, okay, how would you disable the parental lock on your Wi-Fi? And the kid just basically rattles off using a keylogger. He goes, yep, he's human. Man. Like Ash actually understood any of that. I mean, this is Ash we're talking about. He doesn't know what a keylogger is. He thinks it's something to do with Canadians and lumberjacks.
I like it's solid gag.
So anyway, they find out that the guy is basically, he's been taken over by the evil. And now he is evil. He is the evil Santa. And that's how they discover who the big bad is, because in all the horror movies that involve Santa, generally Santa is the big bad. Or in Ash's universe, that's the case anyway. So yeah,
So evil Santa.
Yeah, evil Santa. Or Deadite Santa, I should say. I mean, it's written by...
Oh, Space Ghost.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it was the best or most insane story that I've got for today. Not by a long way. Ash is... Evil Dead 2, A Merry Deadite Christmas, or Merry Deadite Xmas, I should say, is actually the sanest of all the stories I've got.
Well, why are we wasting time with that one, then?
You chose it.
Was it an informed choice?
No, we basically got some publisher names, and that was it.
All right, would you like me to give you a taste of the insanity, then?
Nope, you had your chance. Mick, back to you.
Okay, so...
You sit there and think about what you've done, Rob.
All right. Yeah.
So my next one was written by Keith Giffen and Alan Grant, and
I know what this is.
Simon Bisley.
I know what this is.
And it has a flash on the front that says, "Warning: contains bad taste in the form of ultraviolence, icon bashing, and the finger. More offensive than Christmas usually is."
Yeah, I know what this is because.
Hey Andrew, can you send me some Christmas comics? Sure thing, Mick.
Yeah.
Oh, you fool.
It's all right, Mick, because you know the DC option? That was my DC option as well.
So I had literally about half an hour to recover from the psychedelic mess of stuff going on in my head after the Thing and Ghost Rider team up.
And then you read this.
And then I was presented with the Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing.
Which starts with the heart-rending story of a couple where the husband is recently unemployed and has 10 kids that they are scared of the ultra-violence that will erupt when they tell them there are no presents and no Christmas to be had. And they realise that the only way that they can get around the ultra-violence that will erupt is by starting on a preemptive strike by machine-gunning them so that they can't strike back. And they're going to have to use the gun set on automatic just to make sure that there's no survivors that can wreak a terrible revenge afterwards. Christmas comic, yeah?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
For the children.
What I love about this is the description of Santa.
So just as they're about to embark on this murderous spree, there's a knock at the door, which they open. And there, in front of the door, is a book. Nobody there, just the book. They take it inside, they open it up. And it offers them a glimmer of hope, potentially. It contains a missive, which I will read for you now. No job, no money, no prospects, no Christmas. Each year, thousands of parents die in incidents of domestic violence perpetrated by their very own and very irate
children.
Yes, that's right. Ordinary kids who, realizing they will enjoy no Christmas, turn on their folks with a homicidal mania of unprecedented proportions. Christmas comic, remember that.
Actually reminds me of the most recent Deadpool issue that came out.
What can you do to prevent your death? Fortunately, the answer is simple. Merely read this book to your children. The Lobo Christmas Sanction, or 'Tis the Season to be Jolly. Rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat. Whoa, you say. What difference can one poxy little book make? To which we say, read it to them and see. Backed by our cast iron guarantee. It then produces... They then decide to read through all the bits and pieces in the book just to, you know, make sure that they feel confident in its claims.
Mm.
And it starts, once upon a time, there was this really cool dude and a dog of sorts. And this is where we get told the story of the Easter Bunny contracting Lobo to take care of Santa.
Yes.
Of course. It's a competitive market out there.
It is. It should be said that it's clear that the Easter Bunny is an alcoholic.
He was driven to alcohol because of the massiveness and the capitalist nature of Christmas.
Yeah. So I would recommend that possibly you don't let your kids read this comic. But...
like many Lobo comics, I've got to say, Lobo comics generally aren't for kids.
Yeah, no, do not actually give your children a Lobo comic.
Ever. And so,
even if they're like in their 20s, don't give them a Lobo comic.
So this is about the systematic attack and dismemberment of elves who are doing their duties around Santa's base.
Yeah, but the description of Santa was he was a brutal dictator, and wasn't his name like Chris Crusher Kringle or something like
that?
Yeah,
that's right. They call him Chris Crusher Kringle, and he's got a roommate called Kong, who's a big gorilla.
Didn't he keep like the elves small because he had like strategic starvation?
Strategic starvation kept them small so that they couldn't rise up and revolt. It's mental. It's mental. There's blood everywhere. There's more blood in this Christmas comic than there are sequins in the Christmas edition of Strictly Come Dancing.
Yep. Welcome to Lobo.
Yep.
It's my head hasn't fully recovered. There aren't enough tablets and therapists in the world to help me recover from reading this comic.
Well, I think the only thing to do is pop on a leather jacket, call someone a bastich, and fly off on your space motorbike.
Now, don't forget his other favourite saying is Fetal's Giz, which I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it's unseemly.
But what I liked particularly about it was the twist at the end when the parents get to the last page, which I won't spoil it because this
I was going
to
say, don't spoil it.
Incredibly good fun. And it ends, of course, with Lobo saying, Merry Christmas, compadres. Ho, ho, fragging ho. And there's a bulldog chomping on a cigar. I'm not familiar with the world of Lobo, or I wasn't, until I was scarred by it.
I mean, to be fair, I think you now do understand the fundamentals of Lobo.
I think this is, if this was meant to be my Lobo 101 in my module course in lobotomy,
actually,
sure
it'd be lobology.
Sorry?
It'd be lobology, wouldn't it? Not lobotomy.
I don't know. I know I can't unsee it. I know that because I lay awake screaming now. So, yeah, that was the Lobo, Lobo paramilitary Christmas special from 1991.
I'm just saying, red is a very festive colour.
Therefore, the more red,
the more Christmassy the comic.
And in that case, this is probably the Christmassiest of all Christmas comics. And I guess it would have worked in the days of the Comic Code Authority as well, because the red would have been white.
Oh.
So it would have looked like snow.
Yeah, snow. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, I know where your mind was going. That's why I specify.
Mm.
Hey, so who wants another comic that features a supervillain pretending to be Santa Claus?
Okay.
You don't sound too enthusiastic.
Okay!
No. I realise I need to up the ante. What a comic book. What about a comic book with two supervillains both pretending to be Santa Claus?
Yes, please, Uncle Andrew.
Yeah, okay then. We're having another Marvel holiday special.
Go on then.
This is the one from 2005, which contains three stories, The Mole Man's Christmas, Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santron, and Christmas Day in Manhattan.
Oh, this is the... Yes, Santron. Yes, yes.
So, Christmas Day in Manhattan, it's by Mike Carey, with art by Mike Perkins, Laura Martin, and Dave Lanfear. I'll just skim that one, because it's basically about a fairly obscure Marvel villain called the Hurricane, who tries to rob a Christmas store for his kids, get some toys, and then the Fantastic Four stop and go, yeah, but it's Christmas. So they all go have some eggnog.
I still don't know why they like eggnog so much.
Who knows? So anyway, but yeah, it's just your fairly standard sweet and nice story with a fun rhyming structure like the Doom one. But however, Mole Man's Christmas by Shannon Garrity, Roger Langridge, Al Gordon, Soto Colors, Jay Brown, and Art Monkey's David Lanfear. Him again. That one's fun. It starts off with a mole Santa desperately trying to bargain with children, saying, all right, two baby giraffes. When suddenly a giant monster hand bursts from the ground, grabs him and pulls him underground. And turns out this isn't the first time such a mysterious occurrence has happened. What's going on? It turns out Santa's all across New York getting kidnapped by the Moloids. Dun dun dun. Of course, the henchmen of the Mole Man, and they keep kidnapping Santas, staring at a mysterious picture before giving them the thumbs down and throwing them in the pit. The pit, which is just clearly filled with a bunch of mole Santas who are kind of bored and annoyed. But they have a deck of cards, so that's okay. So, basically, the Fantastic Four, they start looking into these monster attacks, trying to rescue the Santas and find out what's going on. And it turns out, as they learn from capturing one Moloid, that a few days earlier, the Mole Man saw kind of a snow globe, said only the word Santa, and then mysteriously ran away and hasn't been seen for days. So while most of the Fantastic Four decide to go into the Moloid's kingdom and rescue the Santas, the Thing decides that he's sicker, you know, everything being resolved by fighting. He's going to get to the bottom of this here mystery. Hits the streets. Which, incidentally, I really want a Thing series where he's just like a private detective, because he's wearing like the full-on trench coat and fedora, and he's got a little notepad. So the Thing, he goes around asking the questions. Spider-Man says, you know, we fought, but we've hardly had some intimate moments. Neither is the Hulk. But She-Hulk, she knows Mole Man. She's been kidnapped by him once or twice. She points him towards a random woman who, as with many women, Mole Man decided to kidnap and turn into his bride because he's a creepy weirdo. Eventually, Mole Man finds Mole Man's grandma.
Okay.
Who reveals that as a child, Mole Man's granddad would dress up as Santa. And it's kind of one of the few fond memories he has. So if they could just find someone who looked like that Santa, maybe the Moloids would stop trying to kidnap people. But where are they going to find a guy who looks like the Mole Man's granddad with his distinctive, very tall forehead and thin, arching eyebrows? Can you think who that might look like, Rob? Maybe if that character were to take off all of his clothes except for a pair of Speedos.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to get to that.
Yep, Mole Man's granddad looks exactly like Namor. So we just cut to Namor dressed in a Santa costume, but also he's not wearing any boots, so you can just see his little wing feet. Just think, this is the most idiotic plan I've ever heard. But it works. It works because the Moloids are dumb. Even with Namor given that traditional Christmas greeting of yo-ho-ho, oh, Tenenbaum. Do I have that right? Obviously, he's got no idea. And I just love... There's a bit where it just cuts to Reed and just with the look of absolute smug satisfaction at seeing Namor forced to dress up as Santa Claus. But weirdly though, despite all that, the Mole Man still doesn't return. What's going on? Smash cut to like a beach somewhere with just the Mole Man going, actually, I just wanted a vacation. The end.
Okay. Christmas is a scary place in comics, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Especially if you're the Avengers. And now we move on to our next story. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santron. So we are introduced to a woman, the titular Virginia. She's basically trying to make up for a lifetime of being told that Santa Claus isn't real and the emotional heartbreak that brings to children. So she builds her own Santa, who immediately decides he's going to kill the Avengers. This is a story by Jeff Parker, with art by Bradley Brown, inks by Pat Davidson, and letters by our old friend Dave Lanfear, and colours by Christina Strain. So this is the Avengers. They are at their Christmas party at Doctor Strange's house. There's a whole bunch of them. There's Spider-Man, there's Captain America, Tony Stark, there's Wolverine, there's Luke Cage, there's Iron Fist, Yellow Jacket and the Wasp, and the She-Hulk and Spider-Woman. And they're having a merry old time. Well, except for Gravity, who is a brand new hero at the time, who just is not allowed in. It's like a recurring gag where he keeps showing up at the door and everyone just slams it in his face. But eventually he does get there, just in time for the Santa robot to burst down the chimney and engage his naughty nice protocols. There's a fun bit. I like how all the Avengers are naughty, but Gravity's listed as nice. So Wolverine being Wolverine and having literally zero chill cuts Santa's face off, and guess what? It's Ultron. But not only is it Ultron, it's Christmas-themed Ultron, who introduces himself with, "You better watch out, I'm telling you why, Santron has come to town."
Oh, dear.
Do you remember the trailers for Age of Ultron, when he's doing the, "I've got no strings on me," you know?
Yeah.
That bit,
yeah.
It's like that.
Does that old one's just really into cheesy music?
Next he's going to go to Show Tunes, you know that.
Well, not this old Tron, because Spider-Man figures out the only way to defeat him.
Candy canes.
No, even better than that. He adds an EMP in a cookie, and then just like lowers it down on a web with just like a little four Santa card on it. And of course, you know, Ultron's Santa protocol kicks in, and he has no choice but to eat the cookie.
Oh, must eat. No, no, no. Be good, Santron. Must eat.
Comics are great, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Oh, dear.
Is it my turn again?
Yeah, one last one from Rob.
Okay, I'm going to go completely left field. I was going to do...
Oh, yes, because they've all been so completely mainstream and normal so far.
No. I was going to do the Gwenpool holiday special, which... is brilliant because it has Galactus replacing Santa. It's got some great stories in there, and it's got all loads of different characters. One of the stories is called "I Saw Spidey Kissing Galactus, the Bringer of Gifts," and another one is "The War on Pantsgiving," the holiday where everyone has to wear like really short shorts. But instead, I'm gonna go with Wormwood Gentleman Corpse, the Christmas special.
Who the what the how the where, huh?
From IDW Publishing. Wormwood is a gentleman corpse, right? And he's also a dimensional traveller. Now, I've been reading some of the Wormwood comics and they're great.
Right, whoa. Can I just throw out gentleman corpse? That's an easy concept.
He's basically an undead who is basically an urbane gentleman. He, you know, he's known throughout the multiverse as being a fairly affable, if dead, you know, person. This is written and drawn by Ben Templesmith, and it's really good. I can't recommend Wormwood Gentleman Corpse enough. It's one of those bizarre ones that I've discovered on my travels, but the Christmas special is just the best. Because Wormwood, he's basically about to have a pint in this... he's in a particular dimension. He's just about to have a pint, and then an elf comes through a hole in reality, and says he's looking for Mr. Wormwood, and the elf is about to get kicked out of that reality by the barmaid. And Wormwood says, "Let's go have a talk in your reality." So they go back to the elf's reality. Turns out it's the North Pole on Earth, but it's not the North Pole as we've seen it. It's more like the North Pole from Lobo's Paramilitary Christmas. Santa has apparently been killed. See, in order to compete, where Santa basically turned to consumerism back in the 19... basically when Coke changed his uniform from green to red, yeah? That was when Santa decided to adopt consumerism. And, you know, the scope of consumerism and capitalism just grew and grew and grew, and eventually he had to mortgage the North Pole, or remortgage the North Pole, a couple of times, but he couldn't keep up with the debt repayments. And now the venture capitalists have foreclosed on the North Pole and killed Santa and cut one of his testicles off. The elves have been killed. They brought in their own elves, like dark elves and blood elves and things like that. And everything is all about capitalism and consumerism now. And the elf who's gone to ask for Wormwood's help is the last of Santa's battle elves. So anyway, Wormwood...
You throw a lot of things out here, Rob.
Yeah, I know.
And this is like, here's some concepts. Pick any four.
Oh, no. It gets better than that. See, Wormwood has to face down the venture capitalists, but the venture capitalists reckon he owes them money. He's like, I don't owe you any money because all that was forgiven from me saving the dimensions like several times. You know, so they basically wiped out my debt. You can't touch me. So they lock him up, and then you find out Wormwood isn't actually the body. Wormwood is basically a little worm-type thing that goes from one body to another. And Santa's corpse is in the prison. So Wormwood enters Santa's corpse. Yeah, Wormwood enters Santa's corpse, reanimates Santa's corpse, and then opens a hole in dimensions and goes to visit the old man. Now, the old man basically is carrying a scythe and has one of those ring halos above his head. And Wormwood basically says to him, look, I'm not here to talk about you having sex with animals. Just leave that to one side. Here to talk about the things you left behind.
Excuse me. No, not putting that to one side at all. What?
It'll all become clear when you realise who he's gone to visit. He's gone to visit the original owner of Christmas and the person who still has the title deeds to the holiday, which isn't Santa Claus. Santa Claus came and usurped it, along with Christianity. The original Christmas was Saturnalia, and that's who he's gone to visit. So he drags Saturnalia back with him in order to save Christmas. And Saturn now has to become Father Christmas. So he's got to wear the stupid hat, and he's not allowed to have sex with the reindeer.
Guys, I know we've got another section of the show to do, but do you mind if I go have a quiet lie down in the comfort in the comfortable and reassuring surroundings of the Lobo paramilitary Christmas special?
Yes.
That's it, everyone. Show's over. It's cancelled. a mistake.
That is Wormwood, Gentleman Cops.
I'm building a time machine so I can go back and find Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster and just say, no, don't do comics.
I mean, where did that one come from? Wormwood?
That was from IDW.
I think if IDW have a New Year's resolution for 2019, it should be employ an editor.
The thing is, do you know what would be hilarious is if you say that, but then it turns out they already have, and his name's Ben Templesmith, who's also the author and artist of Wormwood.
Yeah.
Gentlemen Cops.
No other comic place will let me get away with this, but if I'm the editor as well...
Exactly. And aren't you happy now I didn't go with the Gwenpool one, which is bizarre and hilarious in its own right?
You just made me feel like the Lobo paramilitary Christmas special was a safe and comfortable place. No, I would have preferred you to do Gwenpool.
Yeah, compared to Wormwood, Lobo's paramilitary Christmas is pretty tame. So let's move on then. Probably not enough time for a break, so shall we just dive straight into the next bit?
Yep, let's go a spelunking. The next bit is comic reviews, by the way. We're going to talk about things we've read.
Yes. Can I go first this time?
You've literally just gone, Rob.
And also, you nearly broke the show.
Yes.
I'm about to save it this time.
No. You will sit there and you will wait while the podcast stitches itself back together. What have you been reading?
I have been reading Doctor Who, The Phantom Piper.
Not Billy Piper, is it?
No, just The Phantom Piper.
Is it Dark
Piper.
War, but with a tiny flute instead of a lightsaber? Vegeta shows up and, like, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan pull out their swords and he just gets going, doo 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 doo.
No, but now I wish it was.
See, I reckon that would have made the Phantom Menace so much better.
To be fair, anything would have made the Phantom Menace better. Anyway, Doctor Who, the Phantom Piper, takes its name from an episode in the Patrick Troughton era where companion Jamie comes around in a medical bay and hallucinates the Phantom Piper, which is a character from the legend of his clan who comes to take you away from the battlefield when your time on this earth is ended. And he thinks he sees the Phantom Piper and to come in to take him away when actually what it is a Cyberman. So that's where it gets its name from. So this is volume 4 of the 12th Doctor Collected Comics from Doctor Who magazine. And it contains 4 stories, The Soul Garden, The Parliament of Fear, Matildas, and The Phantom Piper. And the writers are Scott Gray, and the artists are Martin Garatti, Staz Johnson, Mike Collins, and James Afredi. And unlike the last Doctor Who collection that I did, this has actually got a theme running through it. So the first story, The Soul Garden, the Doctor and Bill arrive on Titan and run into a character who clearly is included in some earlier stories, the crazy quadrillionaire explorer, Rudy Zoom.
Rudy Zoom.
where they encounter some deadly plant creatures called the Halloo. That's how it's written on the back of the on the back of the book. It's H-A-L-U-U exclamation mark.
See, you sound like a posh hiker greeting someone on the opposite hill.
Hello! So they're the deadly plant creatures. Also, Bill goes cloud surfing with Samuel Taylor Coleridge. So that's that story.
What? That's a bizarre left field.
You did a gentleman corpse. I'm doing cloud surfing with Samuel Taylor Coleridge.
I did all not right? do a gentleman corpse, I'll have you know.
Do you think that's supposed to be like some kind of shout out to Dirk Gently?
So basically, this is where we introduce the theme that links all 4 stories. It's about this other dimension called the dream space, and some very adept dreamers can travel through it at will. And just like any other dimension, there are forces of good and forces of evil at work within it. And so they manage to escape the Soul Garden, and then they go on to the Parliament of Fear. And this goes back to another Native American story. We've got a slave who escaped and is now a bounty hunter, and he goes rounding up outlaws that try to escape in the lands that have been given over to the Native Americans, who, of course, aren't living in their normal land because their normal land was given freely to them by the US government until the US government suddenly discovered there was gold in, and I quote, Vendar Hills.
Oh, God.
And then they were rudely shifted. And so what we have then is an encounter with the deadly Stickini.
Who I still contend are just a group of stick figures.
They are not Italian breadsticks. They
which is
are
what
in
I was
fact,
gonna say.
They are in fact a group of alien owl people who are worshipped by one of the Native American tribes. What they don't realize is that they're actual real creatures, but the power of the worship brings them out of the dreamscape. You see?
Of course. Are they at least armed with pointed sticks?
Did you say point head or pointed?
Pointed.
They're owls. They knock you to the ground and rip out your heart. They need no pointed sticks because they've got beaks and talons. This is kind of America's Got Talons.
Good
well
one.
Done. Well done.
So we have a bit of a lethal showdown with the Stickini, and the link to the dreamscape is discovered. And as it's Doctor Who, everything goes swimmingly. And then we find ourselves in the spaceport Cornucopia.
Is that a thing that's been on Doctor Who before? That sounds familiar.
What, the spaceport Cornucopia?
Yeah.
No. Spaceport, yes, but the spaceport cornucopia, no.
There was an episode where they were on a spaceport and they said, wow, look at this spaceport, it's like a cornucopia of things.
Well, yes, but that's not the same as the spaceport called cornucopia. Do you get the difference?
No, I'm just trying to work out where I've heard it before.
Well, cornucopia is quite a common phrase.
That's a spaceport.
Indeed. And we do review comics. It's perfectly reasonable that you have at some point encountered those two words together in a sentence.
Oh, I remember now. It was when I was talking to Barry Cornucopia and his intergalactic wine emporium.
Fair enough. And that's where she meets a group of street kids called the Cabalas. That's Bill. And they're kind of like wannabe superheroes. They're aliens and they've got the odd power. And they capture Bill with a dream catcher.
Sure.
And this is all about a book that the Doctor borrowed from a library. It turns out the librarian isn't who everybody thinks she is. And it's all linked once again to the dreamscape. It's probably the weakest of the four stories. You see, it's so weak, I forgot that it was part of four stories. And then the final story in the collection is the title story, The Phantom Piper. And this is kind of where we get to meet the big bad that's been following around the dreamscape, this character called the Phantom Piper. And they arrive, they meet the Phantom Piper on the lunar colony of Athenia, where an android race of called the Galatians live. And this is slightly reminiscent of the plot from the first Mass Effect game, where we've put sentience into robots and then they've realised that they're sentient robots and then they've risen up and there's been a bit of a war.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
A bit of a kerfuffle.
So what's happened is they've then created these cyborg bodies and put dying human brains into the bodies to try and get around this sentient AI thing. And these cyborgs all think that they're alive. And it's here where the Doctor goes to visit his old friend, Alan Turing. And Alan Turing is practicing a concept that a lot of Doctor Who fans will be familiar with from the 1981 story, Logopolis, which was Tom Baker's swan song, block computational transfer, which is where you can intone mathematics, and the mathematics are so powerful, they can shape reality. And long story short, that's how they defeat the Phantom Piper, by using the block computational transfer method. There's a cliffhanger ending.
Go, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Sight pirate that guy to death.
I think I've just lost the crown for weirdest issue on this episode. I think you've got it back now, Mick.
I mean, fair, DC Comics does also have a character named Johnny Quick,
yeah,
who runs fast by yelling a maths formula.
Yeah, but a maths formula so powerful it warps reality, yes, when you say it.
And then we have a cliffhanger ending at the end of this, which I guess leads into the next collection, which is called The Clockwise War. Yes, please put it on the list of things for us to review. Because just at the end, as victory is being celebrated, someone says, "Don't celebrate just yet, Doctor. We're far from the end. It's been a long time. Even you couldn't imagine how long." And then the Doctor says, "It can't be. You're dead." And then they reply with, "No, but I speak for them."
Okay.
And that leads into the next issue, The Clockwise War.
Well, I'm quite disappointed it didn't end with a really petulant, "No, you're dead."
Which would be ironic from a Time Lord, but there you go. And The Clockwise War will be the final collection from the 12th Doctor era. And I suspect it's probably not going to be quite as scintillating as it promises from its title, because it's the one story in that collection, and then it's backed up by classic tales of the 1st, 4th and 5th Doctors and the Cyberman saga. So there's a lot in there, in addition to the Clockwise War story, whereas this one is four reasonably solid 12th Doctor comic strips collected together. There's the usual, what I like to think of as DVD extras at the back, where they show the preliminary sketches, and there's interviews with some of the artists and the writers, about how they came up with the idea for certain characters and the techniques they used to bring them to life. So that's Doctor Who, The Phantom Piper.
Awesome. Andrew, then.
So I'm going to end the show. And since it is Christmas, I will...
And why are you ending the show?
Because you nearly broke it.
Yeah, that's, like I said, the show's cancelled. It's all over. No, that's okay. I'm ending this single episode of the show with a good, wholesome Christmas tradition of something horribly depressing.
Can I not? Yay! I've got something as well.
Dare you argue with the comic sage?
That's right. Mick's been talking for 7 years. I forgot.
You were saying, Mick?
Shut up. I'm ending the show anyway. Rob, you're fired. Go away.
But I was going to do Thanos. Not, well, that came out wrong.
what you and he want to do on your own time?
Rob and Thanos sitting in a tree.
Hey, if I drop
God, this, Rob, do you Thanos already?
If I drop this on someone's head, it's gonna kill them. This is the Marvel Platinum.
Oh my God! Oh.
Don't worry, it's gonna be very, very quick. Do you want me to do it or not?
Ow! That. Yeah, I think I broke my throat.
While your throat recovers, I'll quickly do this. Marvel Platinum, the definitive Thanos, right? This is by multiple authors, too many to name. So if you want to know more, then buy this. If you wanted to know anything about Thanos, literally anything, I mean, this starts off with like Iron Man from way back in the day. Iron Man 55, it starts off with, where Drax the Destroyer... meets Iron Man and basically gets him to come and help him because there's a mad titan on the loose. And what I like about that issue is that for a good portion of it, it doesn't show you Thanos' face until about halfway through the issue. Then you've got the Captain Marvel stuff where Thanos has the Cosmic Cube and Captain Marvel has to team up with the Avengers to fight Thanos and get him to stop. Thanos becomes a god and they've still got to beat him. And then you go on to the preliminary issues that lead into the Infinity Gauntlet, which a lot of people probably haven't read. And if you haven't read them, then you don't actually know the backstory. You just basically look at... If you've only read the Infinity Gauntlet, then you just look at Thanos and say, okay, he's a bit of a mad guy. And you don't actually know how Infinity War ties into the Infinity Gauntlet specifically, except for the finger snap, right? But... if you read the preliminary issues, it actually makes it clear that Thanos' philosophy in the Infinity War is taken directly from the comics. You know, the whole thing about the imbalance in the universe, about resources being finite, everything like that, it's all taken from the comics, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. So that's really nice to see.
Because technically Infinity War ends... like where Infinity Gauntlet starts.
Well, not quite.
The movie ends basically.
Yeah.
Where the comic starts.
Yeah, with the finger snap.
Yeah.
Yeah. It basically ends where the comic starts. But all of that is just, you know, because the Silver Surfer is basically has a dream about Thanos and death and stuff like that. And that is the preliminary issue leading into it. And that's basically leading into the Infinity Gauntlet itself. But then. You go on to this weird one where Thanos has... it's basically the Mighty Thor number 25. And it's a very Frank Miller-esque art style, I've got to say. Thanos looks a lot blockier than he used to. And he has the... The Chalice of Ruins, the Map of All Ending, and the Illumination Stone. And at that point, I was thinking, this sounds like a D&D game. So anyway... Thor has to beat the crap out of Thanos.
Yeah. Ironically, Thanos plays as a 12th level paladin.
It'd be great. Thor has to beat Thanos and become like the god of gods and the warrior of warriors. Yada yada yada. But then you go on to Thanos Returns, which is Thanos number one, and we actually covered some of this. So I'm not gonna.
Is this the Thanos series that I did?
Yeah, this is the Thanos series that you did. This is Thanos Returns and also goes on the first issue of Thanos Wins. All right, now, it cuts out various bits of Thanos Returns and just focuses on some of the major bits. But what I like about this is that it is the definitive Thanos from the beginning to the end. The thing that I didn't like about it is that with the old comics, oh God, the reading, the amount of dialogue, the amount of boxes, Drax the Destroyer has to explain everything.
Yay, exposition.
It's like, it's just, there's so much to read, and that's why it's taken me so long to go through this, because for the early comics first, I mean, this collects The Invincible Iron Man 55, Captain Marvel 31 to 33, Silver Surfer 34 to 35, and 44 to 45, The Mighty Thor 25, Thanos number 1, and numbers 11 to 13. But it is the definitive Thanos. If you want to know the mind of Thanos, if you want to know what he, you know all about the Mad Titan, this is the thing to read. And it's out now from Marvel.
Okay, good stuff. So now it's me.
Yes. Told you I'd be quick.
Okay, cool. Christmas, sad. Ending the show. We're back up to speed, right? Okay, cool. I have been reading From the World of Black Hammer, Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows.
Oh, God.
By Jeff Lemire, with art by Max Fiumara, and colours by Dave Stewart, and letters by Nate Picos of Blambot. So this is another kind of book set in the Black Hammer universe. So a world which was basically kind of a Marvel and DC mashup where a bunch of heroes mysteriously disappeared. But none of that really matters for this one, because this focuses on a minor character called Dr. Star. And it's kind of told across two time periods. One focusing on his early days in the 1940s, kind of how he got his powers and rose to prominence. And the other focusing on the present day, where he's now retired and kind of looking back on his life. And oh my God, so sad.
It is, isn't it?
No, it's this really tragic story of like a guy who completely loses himself in his work, just trying to get that one big break, but like it's never enough, and he keeps going bigger and bigger, and eventually ends up going on a mission in space which goes badly wrong, and by the time he makes it back to Earth, he realizes what a huge mistake he's made, but by then it's too late, and just his entire home life is completely messed up. And then in the present, it's about him trying to reconnect with his son, who is now dying of cancer. So it's very heavily inspired by James Robinson's Starman run.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Star is obviously a very obvious stand-in for Starman. And it's just that, it's that examination of kind of father-son relationships.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm just looking at the final page and it's...
Oh God, don't remind me. Don't remind me of that final page. I read this and I was like, I'm not crying. You're crying.
It's just my hay fever in December. Yeah, so the story is just really good. And it's a great kind of standalone thing. You don't really need to know anything about Black Hammer to get into this. And also the art is just...
It's exceptional.
Yeah, it does such an amazing job. Well, first of all, of just showing kind of the majesty and wonder of this guy's powers in space exploration. But then you get to the modern day where everything's just like a bit grayer and a bit more muted. And God, just, he looks so old and tired and broken.
I love the expressions as well, the way they did the human emotions in it.
Yeah, I like that. All the characters, it is kind of, the faces are a bit caricaturesque. So lots of their facial features are quite heavily enhanced. But that's just such a good job of just kind of showing the emotions these characters are going through. Like, even little things like his wife when she's being all kind and supportive. But you could also see, like, how scared and unsure she is that, like, she'll maybe never see her husband again.
Yeah.
And in a sense, she doesn't. But yeah, that's... I mean, I want to be very quick with this as well, because I don't want to say too much, because it's definitely a book I would recommend going and reading for yourselves.
Yeah.
And I think anything else I could say would just spoil what is an exceptional story.
And it's basically, remember when I gave it to you and I said, I can't say anything about this, you've got to read it yourself.
Yeah, it's basically that. So, now we're all sad.
Yeah.
It's the perfect mood for Christmas.
I'm going to go back and read Lobo now. Again.
Oh no, we've pushed him into the arms of another man, Rob.
Wormwood, gentleman, corpse. That's who you want.
No, I really don't. That's how you broke the show, remember?
Anyway, that's it from us for this year.
Yep.
Well, I say that this is the last regular show, but be on the lookout for two special little things we did to tide you over for the holidays.
Yep. We'll be back on the 14th of January. So look out for us then. But until then, you can find all of our little episodes over Christmas and various other things that we're doing over Christmas on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. So we'll see you all in the new year. Have a Merry Christmas. Have a Happy New Year from all of us at 4Panel and the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Don't you speak for me. Maybe I don't want them to have a Merry Christmas.
Okay. Happy Hanukkah. Eid Mubarak. I don't know what the... what is it for Diwali?
I don't know, but whatever you're celebrating, I hope it's a good one.
Yes. So
without any tears.
Yes. So with that in mind, until next year then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all in the new year.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.
Show is over. Show is over.